everyone. Welcome to This Is Ro, a podcast dedicated to all my fellow nomads out there. On this show, I'll be sitting down with my friends and chatting about how their life stories have prepared them for who they are today, how they're just figuring it out, connecting the dots, and what the roadblocks are on the way to their version of success. On this week's episode, we'll be chatting more about growing up in Asia. And I hope you enjoy. I was born in the Netherlands to a Dutch dad and a Filipino mom. My brother and I, we were raised there for a few years until my dad decided to apply to get relocated. And when I was six, the opportunity presented itself for us to relocate to Singapore. My mother was very pleased, considering the fact that we would be closer to the Philippines, and we would be able to be raised in a Western and Asian culture, considering we are a biracial household. When I was growing up, that I was one of maybe four kids in the entire school that was brown-skinned at the time, and that we didn't know better. I had white family members. My grandparents were white. Nothing about that was strange. Like, that was my world. And the time that that really changed was when I went to Singapore and found other brown people around me. And there were all different shades too. Like, I was very dark because I loved being outside, but there was different shades of brown. And all of a sudden, I wasn't the only brown kid that I would see. And so I grew up in Holland being as Dutch as I am. So in Singapore, I attended a Dutch school for a while. And we do that in like the expat world, just in case you go back to your passport country within a few years. So then it doesn't really mess up your educational system, which is fair. And so we did that for about 5 years. So you're introduced to like the Dutch culture in Singapore, which is like a really weird way of kind of keeping a culture alive in a different culture. Naturally, after grade six, if you weren't moving back to your passport country, you would have to choose to go to an international school. I will say that going to United World College, and it was only for 4 years, was absolutely life-changing. And I couldn't be more grateful for my parents and having them push for us to be able to go to that school. It's where I've met some of the most amazing people who, when I'm around them, make me feel like I'm home and never have to explain my cultural situation, why I sound a certain way, why I act a certain way, why my interests are a certain way. It's the one place where I think we all have discussed this in the past, that connects the most with, I think, who I am. So now we're in an international setting where you have way more kids. It's a way bigger school. You wear a uniform. You get used to that very quickly. And you kind of get taught that it's not all about you and your story, and that we all have one and we have to coexist in that way. Like, I don't feel like if it wasn't for going to UWC, and I don't know if it's like the school or like, I think it's more of like the people that I got to meet, that set the tone for who I am today. And for me, it was like I lived in Singapore and it changed my life. It's why I feel international. It's why I feel like I'm foreign. It's why I feel like these stories are super important to be shared. But intersectionality and diversity is really part of somebody's identity. And it can A, be very confusing, and B, just very heartbreaking when other people just don't get it. Like in Holland, I was a kid. I was born there till I was six. So I only knew what I knew. Like in one of the pictures that I'm putting up on the blog, I have a walking doll that I got. I got two walking dolls for my fifth birthday. One is white and one is black because they didn't have one that looked like me growing up. So like I didn't know better. Like that was my upbringing. But my household was biracial. So like I knew that my mom was brown and I knew that she was from the Philippines. I knew that we ate mangoes. Like we were in touch with it. But not as much as when I moved to Singapore and realized I was like, oh, yeah, UWC in Holland, the Dutch school has like white people, but like the rest of the country isn't. And I think that's where the difference came in from, like, understanding that biracial element. Because it was never there in the Dutch school. It's kind of like here. It's people just see me as white, mainly, growing up. I don't think my parents really had the conversation per se with me because I was really young. But like my brother already suffered a lot of racism in school that I think that could have also kind of motivated them a little bit more to be like, I want more for the kids than having to, you know, my brother. It's so funny. This also shows how stupid people are. They called him a Kiwi. And both of us know that Kiwis are like a symbol for being from New Zealand. So they would say, you're a Kiwi and get out of my country, is what the boys said at school in Holland. So like we never, because I was thinking about this, I was like, did my parents ever have the conversation with me that I was biracial? And I realized that they didn't, because it didn't really come up, I think, for me, because I was one of those kids that like, and I still find myself being like that today, where it's like, I care, but not enough to let you win to make me feel like I don't belong here. Like, I'm always aware how people speak or like comments that they make, like as an adult, but I'll never be like, well, then I don't belong in this room. No. But I do realize that like going to Singapore, that really did help. Cause now you're just one small community in like this really big like island.
I asked like why you feel like Singapore gave you your life, right?
Oh, yes.
Different pockets of reality, right? Like you had actual Singapore with other Asian people outside of the gates of UWC, within UWC, or even within the school system. You had the Chinese school, the German school. So it was like everyone had their own little spot, right? And it could mm-hmm. be really tiny, and then there was like everything in between.
Mm-hmm.
You said something also really interesting that was that. You don't know if your parents ever had that talk with you about you being biracial. So was there a moment in your life where you realized you were biracial, or like had a moment where you're like, oh, I'm different from like all the others, I'm biracial?
When I came to Singapore, it also allowed us a lot more access to being in the Philippines. Because it was so close. But when I went to the Philippines while living in Holland, I was always that. My mom said, you were the kid who just sat there and smiled because you weren't bilingual at the time. So like no one could converse with me. So there was like no real connection to that side of the family yet. But they always made me know that I was foreign. Like I was white, essentially. So that's how I saw myself. I think in Singapore, it became known that I was like, oh, my dad's like the only white guy in the room. That's kind of like where it became, like where the shift happened. Because you see it, you like witness it. It's like a lived experience now versus a story. And then the stories came up of like my mom explaining what her journey was like when she became an immigrant and like how she met my dad and like what his family did to her. And that's really when she disclosed the difficulties in her journey to being accepted as being a foreigner coming from such a poor country. And then when we were in Singapore, it was so much easier. It was only like a 4-hour flight to go home for her. And all of a sudden we were there a lot. That's when I really had this bond. I could also speak English by then. So it was a lot easier to bond with my family. I would just tag along with everyone. If it was church, I always asked to go to the supermarket, to the wet market. Like, you have to experience a wet market. And I would be like, yeah, it smells, but like, this is so interesting. Like, watching people live, like how they live. And that's how I was introduced to my Filipino culture. And then it became very clear. I was like, oh, but I want to be a part of this too. You know, once you leave a place, like for me leaving Holland and then coming back on vacation, you're not really that Dutch anymore. You're already influenced otherwise, right? By a life in Asia, being an expat, and then just having all those like cultures flowing through you. So like you're in this Dutch community in Singapore, but like my mom was the only Asian person in the Dutch community in Asia. It's like very ironic. And sometimes people would call her a maid because my mom took care of like the sick elderly or terminally ill elderly back in Holland for her job as a nurse. And she would always be upset because she always thought that I was the one that said that. But I found that her projection of her frustration was that even in the Dutch community in Asia, as an Asian woman, she still couldn't get the respect that she deserved of having like, oh, well, your mom was just a maid, just because there's a lot of Filipino maids.
You're observing your parents like being the onis in like different situations, right?
Yeah.
That's really fascinating. So you're like a mix of two onis, which makes you like a triple oni.
When we ended up relocating to the Philippines, I think it was like my opportunity be more Filipino because I lived and was born in Holland. For people, that's like, well, then you're Dutch. But because you've never lived in the Philippines, you can't say you're Filipino almost. And so I found that I was like, oh, wow, it's like my only opportunity to say like, well, I promise I'm really Filipino other than just my mom because I lived there. It's like I would have to prove that I was Filipino enough to call myself Filipino. I do understand the struggle that people have like here in America. As like I've met a lot of Filipinos who are like first gen, second gen, who like don't really have any connection to that part of their heritage, but very much look Filipino. So I can also imagine that's a complete different layer of just confusion and differences. But yeah, I wanted to say that moving to the Philippines gave me an opportunity to really be submerged into a life in the Philippines. Like I did grocery shopping with my family where locals went, not where like all the rich people live. Really hung out with my cousins. We would go, if there were no English movies, I would go to Filipino movies and I would try to understand them. And to me, I felt Filipino. I want to say that those 2 years did give me more of like a connection to a long line of a heritage that I haven't even managed to cover. And I think it's really cool to say that, like, I'm realizing now today living in America that a lot of people have, they get to claim the label, but not the lived experience. And that always bothered me until someone in coaching told me people have the right, obviously, to label themselves with their identity of their heritage. I'm not against that. It's just, it feels like it's being dismissed for me in my personal experience when I say it, because like I actually lived there. Like I had a home that I built with my family. And
I think part of that is because they haven't had to justify it, right? When you haven't had to justify it, you haven't had to code switch, explore different types of nationalities, you just don't get it, you know?
And I think that through my entire life, and I think this is why I get so nervous, like I just get the sweats to even talk about it, because other people, A, it's not their norm, or B, just don't understand because they have never lived it that way, that God forbid you could be part of more than one place. And that topic is still up for discussion. It just hurts to think that everyone always said, specifically like in Holland, it was like, well, you're Dutch, so you should just be Dutch. That's basically saying, I don't accept the parts of you that I don't understand or cannot relate to. And therefore, I just ask of you to just be the version of you that I get. And so when I hear people say, he's like, oh, yeah, no, like I'm Hungarian, Polish and German. And I go, oh, OK, so like to what extent does that influence who you are? He's like, well, nothing. I go, well, can you then see that when I say it, I'm trying to give you the foundation of being like, oh, well, she is multiracial, multicultural, which means like the way she speaks and things and how she sees the world is diverse. And then I've found that most people don't look at it that way. They use it as just a label versus the lived experience.
I think that brings up a really interesting concept, right?
Which part?
Which is this idea of like ownership, right? Of having to prove your nationality, your ties to it by living there, right? But also like how important it is to like feeling like you're part of that.
Yeah.
You know, so you don't feel disconnected. So I think that's really interesting.
I never even thought about it that way. But yeah, that's actually the most obvious. You've never had to justify it. You just get to have it.
Yeah. And so the relationship to your own race and racial identity that you can have, right?
This conversation between Marlena and I was recorded a handful of weeks before I even launched the podcast, never mind this particular episode about growing up in Asia. I didn't really know what to expect, and I'm really grateful for her being able to prompt me in a way that made me feel comfortable with sharing my personal experience of what it was like relocating to Asia and that entire journey as a child. Today, as a woman in her 30s living in America, I still struggle from time to time with my identity. I notice that the way I was introduced into the family, to my husband's friends, was that I used to live in Holland and then I moved to New York. So to them, I'm Dutch, right? So especially in the beginning, I just let that go, right? And technically I am Dutch, right? That's not a lie. And the reason why I struggle from time to time is that it just doesn't feel like it's accurate, as if it's not an accurate description to who I am. So therefore, I find myself saying it up front, like I'm not American, just to let someone know that I am not from this culture, so I can still get it wrong or my perspectives are different. And in that place of not wanting to make it confusing for other people, I realize that sometimes I end up emotionally suffering a little bit, feeling like the majority of people around me get to be whole with who they are and who they interact with and how they introduce themselves. But I adjust to them in a situation in a group. I forget how long it's been since I felt this wholeness in myself socially. Starting this podcast really contributed to me processing the past and past discomforts and trying to right the wrongs of my own shortcomings of being young and scared and just unknowing on how to stand up and speak up for myself, specifically with this racial identity theme. And I also know that in America, it's you're allowed to just be who you are, right? Everyone can be whoever they want to be. It's the land of the free. But there is a sense of discomfort when you want to kind of correct. It's like, oh, is your name Raquel? Oh, no, it's Rochelle, right? Like you just want to correct someone the way your name is pronounced. And I feel like I have to right a lot of those wrongs where I just wanted to fit in and adjust as quickly as possible as a result for other people's comfort and my own, really, of not wanting to answer too many questions. And I think growing up, a lot of it was always other people trying to justify how it's okay for them to just call me Dutch. I've been considered white a lot in my life, whether it's being in the Philippines or here in America. And sometimes it's whatever, you know, and there's other times where I really feel like I'm doing myself an injustice by not correcting it. And also, I've never had to identify myself as much as I have in this country. This podcast, in a way, is reminding myself of this is your upbringing. This is how you were raised. This is the identity that you've taken on. And you've been shamed. You've been asked to be different. You've been asked to be submissive or have parts of yourself be diluted for others' comfort. And being in 2023, I asked myself to put in more effort to be more myself openly. And I hope that with this podcast and the process of the confidence to do that, you also have to be ready for people to have a response to what it is that you're saying. Most importantly, it's my story. And I'm the director, I'm the curator, I'm in charge. And I want to take ownership of where I feel like I lost part of myself, whether it was for work or to integrate into the American work culture, to just feel more accepted. That is very Ro in her 20s. And I don't want to be like that anymore in my 30s. Something else that came up for me from this conversation was growing up, and till this day, really, my mother always taught me how to take the negative and move on and try to move on in a way that it doesn't affect me. Something she wasn't culturally taught was standing up for yourself. My mother's response is partially a traumatic one in a way where she was racially discriminated when she first moved to the Netherlands in the 80s for years, whether it was our family or people at work, even though she was the most educated, highly educated person around. And I can understand where you have a choice. You either let it affect you or you spend your energy and your time finding ways to not let it eat away at your soul, to then have a possible effect of you changing your authentic self based on other people's projections or opinions about you. So I fully acknowledge that her trying to teach me for years, mind you, don't let it affect you, don't let it change you, and just move on. That saying where it's none of your business to know what other people think and say about you, that statement applies in this particular scenario, in this particular situation. And as much as you want to know, I've learned now something that I really wish I knew in my 20s is, what good does that do? What good does it do for you to know what other people think or may say about you? I've always been misunderstood because you don't have to understand me. All I ask is that you just respect me. Respect me as a person who's just trying to figure it out. In combination with my mother's teaching and just evolving as a woman in an ever-changing society, I want to be better, setting the wrongs right again. I want to take responsibility and say, I really feel discomfort in this scenario, or I really don't agree with that opinion, or you're no one to tell me that what I'm saying is wrong. What I know is what I know, and what you know is what you know. We just need to know that those things can be different. In light of this entire conversation and more, this is not going to be the last time that this is going to come up, obviously. However, here are some of the things that I wish I knew that I know now, and that I hope others could not even understand, but just hear me out, is in the end of the day, I think we're all just fighting for wanting to be seen. We just want to be seen. Whether that comes from trauma in your household, from a parent, from a partner, from a spouse, being bullied, being neglected. I think in general, we just want to be seen. And with that, we just want to be respected. And in the end of the day, I think we'd all like to be celebrated. And I don't think you have to have other people do that for you. You can celebrate yourself, you can respect yourself, you can advocate for yourself. But after all, this whole life, you don't do it on your own. There's a lot that you do with each other. And what I'm realizing from my time in America and a lot of the conversations that we're having around race and identity and things like that is, I think it's really intimidating to feel like your identity or your race or your culture isn't being seen as equal or equally as valid than another. And I really wish that I knew earlier on that more people feel this way, more than not, right? And it's really scary to feel like a part of you might be dying, whether it's a culture or a race or just, you know, your lived experience and your memories, like they're changing. And really to embrace where you are today and to give yourself permission to evolve. The way I see it at this point is, yes, I'm Dutch Filipino and I was born in one place and I was raised in Singapore and now I live in America, is I am all my lived experiences. I am all my lived cultural experiences. I'm not one. And I know why I'm not the one. And it's not to be cool, or it's more confusing to introduce yourself than anything. I just have so many more cultural influences from different places running through me. So my perspectives just evolved that way. And now living in America, a part of me is partially American too. I wish I knew that no one can take that away from me ever. And I also wish that I knew how to tell someone to just mind their business. I'm not for everyone. You're not for everyone. we just need to find our tribe, and that's it. That's not true. I also wish I knew that somebody else could be intimidated by my biggest insecurity and see my full potential. So why not just focus more on what I can do versus what other people tell me that I can't? I want to say that I am hopeful for the world. And I'd like to say that I think there is room for us to coexist with our stories. I do think there is room to share them, to learn from each other. But we all have to be willing to be open to it. I never knew how much of my story and my upbringing and parts of myself that I have diluted without realizing how that's really my own power. Everyone has a story. Everyone has their own power. But if you're not living in your true self, and if you're not living in a way that you're embracing that, you're not just doing your tribe a disservice. Most of all, you're doing yourself a disservice. Something that I really hope will happen, that if I ever have the privilege of starting my own family, that my kids could understand and have a glimpse of what my upbringing was like. I know that that might not really be possible, but I'm always afraid that that part of me will die out, even though that's not possible because it's who I am. But I'm always worried that that part of myself will die out once I have my own family. My family doesn't live here. I don't really have anyone that represents that around me. And sometimes that scares me to think that if I ever became a parent and started my own family, that wouldn't have any value. So that little kid in me who knows this fruitful life never could have imagined that growing up, it would be this exciting of a journey. And I wish I knew in my 20s that the thing that made people uncomfortable was really my superpower. And I really would have wanted to have leaned in on that more. And I guess that's why they say it's never too late. So I made the promise to myself that my 30s will be looking very different. And now I understand more and more about how when you hit your 30s or your 40s, that you wish you could be 20 again because you have all this knowledge about who you are and what you like, and that your 20s don't really mean anything. Your 20s don't take anything seriously. Don't think that any of this is for life, because once you hit 30, that's really when the changes are going to happen. Sometimes I'm still scared and nervous about bringing all of this content to the world and have others be able to access that, never mind know me and access that. But I'm very excited to see what could come of this. And I really hope any of this, or even if it's one thing that resonated for you, I hope you know that you're not alone, and it is confusing to be multicultural, and it is confusing to integrate whether or not you're multicultural. It's just challenging, and all you can do is your best and just be ready to know that you're going to evolve in ways that you never thought you would. And I'm here for it. Thank you so much for tuning in and contributing to a space where we share stories and perspectives. If you like what you hear, please hit that follow button, and your rating and reviews can help get this podcast out there to more listeners. If you'd like to follow along, you can find me at This Is RO Podcast on Instagram. And be sure to check back every Wednesday for new episodes. Much love. Until next time, this is Ro.